You're listening to WWBC, Cocoa, Merritt Island, Melbourne, Titusville, and the Beaches, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Vieira, 94.7 FM, and W264AS, Melbourne, and Palm Bay, 100.7 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Begee on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, and FM 100.7. This show is called Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and boy, do we have an action-packed show today. We've got Ellen Little in studio as usual.
Hey, Sita, happy Monday.
Yeah, she's trying to grab a mic. See, Viewpoint with Sita and Friends is a very unscripted, informative show. And we are here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. Pastor Paul is running the board for us. Thank you very much. We appreciate you being here. We've got Claire Ellis, who is the chairman of the Anti-Human Trafficking Committee here with us this morning, and many more things. She wears a lot of hats. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Sita. We, Zonta Club of Melbourne, really appreciate you inviting us on the show.
Thank you
so much.
And we've got Janelle Bouza. Janelle is with the Brevard Regional Hyperbaric Center.
Yes.
Welcome again.
Thank you very much.
And a friend of the show.
So happy to be back. It's always a pleasure to be with all you wonderful ladies.
And our fourth seat is filled with Cindy Young. She is an agent, like a spy. No, she's not. It just feels good to say agent, right?
Yeah.
It's like Miami Vice, right? Agent Young is here, and she's been employed by our very own Sheriff Ivy, Sheriff's Office, for over 14 years and has specialized in the investigation of intimate partner violence as well as all crimes related to domestic violence. So welcome aboard.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you having me.
So our show today, we're speaking with Janelle and Claire and Agent Young about domestic violence, human trafficking. We're also going to speak a little bit about the hyperbaric chamber. We'll have Janelle talk a little bit about what her mom and dad does for a living, which is really cool, what they're doing.
About
oxygen.
Yes. The chocolate festival.
And at the end of the show, stay tuned. We'll talk about the chocolate festival. But before we do that, we've all seen what happened this past week in Parkland, Florida, with the gun violence again. A lot of us thought that after Newton, Connecticut, that... And after Aurora and after all these other places, right here at Pulse Nightclub, we thought that we would see some change in legislation. And people were so passionate and they were so hot, they were going to do certain things. And then it got cold, it fizzled out, and then more murders again. So how do we make our communities safer, improve our education system, protect our environment, at the same time have critical legislation to protect the people that want to own a gun legally and be responsible with it, and to how to help those that does not need it. To just say, hey, you don't need it. You've got a mental illness or there's something in your background that triggered. How do we spot those people, right?
Mm-hmm.
So to talk about that topic, I have a friend of the show, Cheryl Anderson. And Cheryl's on the phone and she's an activist with Moms Demand Action here in Florida. So Cheryl, thank you for taking the time to call in.
Oh, thank you so much. For having me on.
Well, you've been a friend of the show, and our sponsors really wanted to talk about this issue and see, you know, what's going on and have your input with us. But before we ask you, give us a little bit about your background.
Well, I've been an activist now for 5 years. Gun violence was the issue. One of my oldest and dearest friends lost her only child. Her only child was taken through gun violence. I'm sure most of you have heard the story of Jordan Davis. His mom and dad are very, very old friends of ours. And that's what spurred me into action. I have 5 grandsons and a granddaughter, and I just couldn't imagine not doing anything to prevent it from happening to them. And so I became involved with Moms Demand Action, and over the last 5 years, I've served them a number of positions, one as the state chapter leader for about 3 years, and currently I am the Jacksonville local group lead, and I'm also the state survivor engagement lead.
Well, thank you. That quite extensive bio there. The last time we talked, we had talked right after Newton, Connecticut, and we were all grieving for those children. And we spoke about the AR rifles, and we spoke about why we thought those semi-automatic weapons should not be in the hand of civilians. Could you elaborate a little bit about that?
On that, well, that seems to be the hot topic that's going on right now with everyone. They're talking about the AR rifles and the AK rifles and so forth and so on. But where we concentrate, we realize that these rifles take a lot of lives at one time. But what I also would like folks to understand is that we are losing 96 people every day, 96 people every day, even to handguns. The issue of gun violence prevention and gun safety is huge. There are many, many components to it, we're working on the things that we know that can prevent the most deaths from gun violence. And that's one of those things is requiring a criminal background check on all gun sales, and keeping strong concealed carry systems in place. Those are two things that we know will do that. But we're also looking at a great deal of new legislation that's just been proposed that has just come out in the wake of this horrendous incident here in Parkland that I know will make tremendous difference in Florida if we can get a vote.
So tell us, what is the red flag bill?
A red flag bill is that's a new kind of legislation that's been going around the country, and what it does is that it allows family and law enforcement to request they're allowed to request a risk protection order that would remove a person's access to firearms, temporarily for the time where we know that they are a danger to themselves and or a danger to others. So not only does a red flag bill help us in the event of this, where we see signs of folks, kind of saying things where they might harm others, it's a really good deterrent for suicide. So if you have someone you see may have signs and be at risk for suicide, you're able to go into court, which protects their rights, which protects that individual firearm owner's rights. So they're entitled to due process, and it protects their due process, but it also will allow us to do the things necessary to keep them and to keep our society safe. And there is currently a bill that has been proposed, a Senate bill, SB 530, that has been proposed by Senator Gibson. And we're hoping that we can get that bill brought forward for a vote.
Well, Cheryl, thank you so much for taking the time to call in. And I just want to let you know that Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, we're committed to bringing valuable information to our listeners. And we appreciate you giving out information about that bill. Our hearts, our hearts are broken as well for all the young lives that were ripped away in such a senseless act. It's just brutal. Before you go, though, tell us a little bit, what about the Everytown Survivor Network?
Well, the Everytown Survivor Network, which is the newest role that I've taken on for the state of Florida, is where those whose lives have been impacted by gun violence, those whose lives, like mine, were completely turned upside down, are able to gather together. We support each other, and depending upon what they're interested in, we might, they're interested in being an activist, then we'll help them take some of those steps and help them get some of the knowledge that they need, some of the training that they might want to have in order to do that. And then sometimes we're just there to support and hold each other up. And I've heard from many, many survivors that when this happens to them, they feel very much alone. And so we want to let them know that they're not alone, that we are there, and that we will be there for them and as a support organization. So we've asked folks that if they are have that kind of impact, if they would text the word survivor to 64433, they can be connected once they've filled out the information and respond to that particular text, that their information will be sent to me, and then we'll go forward from there.
And Cheryl, before you leave, do you have a website that if people wanted to check out and see what Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in Florida is doing, or just in America? I know you've got a few websites. Give us your website so people could go and look it up and maybe send you a message.
Sure. Our main website is momsdemandaction.org. And if you are on Facebook, you can find us at Moms Demand Action-FL. Moms Demand Action-FL for Florida.
Well, thank you very much, and we'll hear from you next week again. And I think next week we want to talk a little bit about the march that the students from the high school, from Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, they're organizing a march in Washington, D.C., and we would talk a little bit about that as well.
I would love to talk to you also about our Throw Them Out program. We have a number of actions that folks can take right away that I would really like to talk to them about.
Thank you.
So both of those things will be great topics. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you next week. Okay.
Bye-bye. Oh.
I mean, everybody wants the same thing at the end of the day, right? Everybody wants safety, a good education for their kids, an opportunity. But what are we supposed to do as activists? We're supposed to stand up for the people that don't have a voice, right? And it's like first we saw what happened in Newtown, then we saw what happened in Aurora, then we saw what happened in the Pulse nightclub. And we all said, well, we're going to have a march, we're going to talk to our state legislators, and they ask us to text people, and they ask us to call, and we did. And now it's like people are wondering, how did this guy who was 18 years old and couldn't purchase a beer or alcohol was able to buy a rifle?
Well, I think the real conversation needs to not only include gun safety, but it also, we need to have a more updated conversation on mental health and what it means to have mental health issues, and how, you know, it's not a stigma that needs to be hidden. It's something it's there. Everyone sees it. Everyone saw that this kid had problems, and it needs to be more about, I think, taking action. You know, civil responsibility. Everyone's responsible. Everybody.
Yeah, what does it say? If you see something, say something.
If you see something, say something. And that, yeah.
It's a stigma attached to mental health that a lot of families don't want to talk about. They want to sweep it under the rug.
Right.
But really and truly, the people around you who love you the most are the ones that need to reach out and say something. Mm-hmm. And there's no excuse for not reaching out. There's so many places now that offer mental health screening that you could call. I think Anna Ishkamani, who's running for office, she had put a few things up this morning, and later on in the show, I think I'll give those up. But I think she had said, like, as a concerned citizen, they were saying in Orlando, you could go to University of Central Florida, have Vanessa Stein, they're doing counseling at UCF, psychological services, CAPS at Rollins College, they're doing some counseling there as well. Valencia College, all the colleges, if you have friends there that need help, they have a department that you can go and speak with someone as well. Mm-hmm. And I think the police department does too, right? Don't you have a couple of phone numbers too?
But we have a lot of resources for people who are looking to be directed to whatever type of resource you need.
Yeah,
211 Brevard has got a ton of things.
Yeah. 211 Brevard. Well, so the thing is, the argument that there isn't mental health help in Brevard or around the nation, I mean, maybe it's true to some level, but I think if you call, they check, they do follow up on it.
It's just like kids who say they're always bored. What do you want to do this week? I don't know. There's nothing to do in Melbourne. There's something to do. You just got to look it up.
That's right. That's right. So for our listeners who are tuning in, this is Sita Begay. Our show is called Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We're here on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7. And so we're going to go to our in-studio guest. We have Claire Ellis, who's here with us. She's the chairman of the Anti-Human Trafficking Committee. Janelle Bouza is here with Brevard Regional Hyperbaric Center. And then we have Cindy Young, who is a special agent with the here in Brevard County. We're just giving her special because she's special. She's actually an agent with the Brevard County Domestic Violence Unit, right?
Yeah, with the Sheriff's Office. Sheriff's. Victim
So let's have Claire. Well, since Claire seems to be a she's like my contact person for Zonta here in Melbourne, Tell us a little bit about the Zonta Club.
The Zonta Club of Melbourne works very hard to improve the status of women any way we can. We work diligently to stop violence, domestic violence, and that's what brought us to a partnership with the Brevard County Sheriff's Office. And Sheriff Ivey called us. We're very close with Sheriff Ivey, and he respects us a lot, and he knows we're all volunteers and very hard workers. So he called us and said, come on over. I have something I want to talk to you about. And he started telling us about the strangulation program that they were trying to make the community aware of strangulation. And he wanted to know if we would partner with him and go out and do the same thing we did with human trafficking and awareness, just make people
so communication
aware.
Communication and awareness. It seems to be the
signs,
two things.
What to do. And we didn't even really know ourselves all the dangers and the horrors of what strangulation really can do and what it is. And then he connected us with Agent Cindy Young, and she's been wonderful, and we've been working together, and we're going to be talking to anybody who will listen about this issue, and I'll turn it over and let Cindy talk a little bit more about how this came about and why this issue is so important.
Okay, so, you know, as a law enforcement agency, we don't just respond to crimes, but we follow crime trends, and we you know, keep up with the new laws and different things that come about. And a few years back, there was a law passed where it made it a felony if strangulation was involved in a domestic violence event. So that was working great, except for as we're following along with the cases that we're getting, we're finding that we're not really getting the conviction rate, and you know, we couldn't figure out, well, what can we do? And just like a lot of we were discussing earlier, there's a lot of issues, social issues, and there's never just one answer. There's got to be you know, a varied approach at it. And so when we had two domestic violence strangulation homicides, and
so when you say strangulation, is it by hands or rope or whatever it is to cut off the airway?
There could be many different ways to do it. You can, you know, suffocation.
Yeah, with a pillow. Yeah,
with a pillow.
Yeah.
With a device, with the hands, mm-hmm. You know. There's just lots of
amazing.
Ways.
That's something we don't think about, but it does. I'm glad that Claire brought this up for our show. This is an interesting topic.
Well, you know, and you can restrict the blood flow to somebody's brain, and, you know, and that will be considered a strangulation as well as the restriction of the airflow.
Yeah.
So, you know, those factors and those things are not really well publicized, you know, and especially when it comes to, you've got the stigma of domestic violence to begin with. You know, you've got intimate partners happening inside the home. A lot of people don't like to come out. It's embarrassing to come out and say, you know, oh, you know, the person who I love and married is, you know, is mistreating me and abusing me. So a lot of times when we get the calls, it's already to the point of desperation. So when we get a call to the law enforcement, at this point, somebody's scared to death.
And it happens to people from all walks of life. We just saw on television where one of the gentlemen in the White House, he had beaten up his wife, I think, and then the girl, we saw the black eye.
And there's not a
it happens.
Yeah. There's no, it's everywhere. Okay, so, but I'll say that, you know, like I said, I don't care who you are, it's still embarrassing to come out and let everybody know these things. This is why, you know, a lot of the victims will try and cover up their bruises. They won't go to work the following day. They'll try and figure a way out themselves. But one of the most lethal forms of domestic violence is strangulation. And like I said, leading up to us starting even talking about how we're going to address this issue and enforce this law to the best we can, our best ability, is we needed to partner with the community. And that's what we did. And we started a work group with the sheriff's office. We reached out to the Department of Health. We reached out to our domestic violence shelters, the fire rescue folks, you know, UCF sociology department has helped us with doing research and tracking the cases since we started and implemented this idea to try and gather more evidence to support the charge. That way maybe we can hold these offenders accountable better, because they're not just doing it to the one person that may get away.
Okay, it's a pattern.
It's happened
you
before.
Follow it. Yeah.
And a lot of times, you know, perpetrators of any type of crime is going to do what works. You know, if I figure out that I can control you in one certain manner and it's worked in other with other people, well, then I'm going to do it to you too.
It's all about power and control.
Yeah, well, why would I change my tactics if it's working? If everything works this way before, why wouldn't I do it this way in the future? So it's not just about the one victim. So it's really, this program is more directed towards offender accountability and early advocacy for the victims, you know, education. There's many different areas, medical education to the medical field, our emergency responders, our first responders through the fire rescue, our health department folks that see people that walk in, you know, anybody that's going to see these victims and identify the symptoms and be able to help educate the victims of the dangers.
So let's say someone sees someone, like you say, maybe you're in a doctor's office or at work or a family member, and what do they do? Is there a special phone number that they call or a website? Because, of course, people want to be anonymous as well. They want to help victims. So is there, like, something someone they can call and have someone speak to them privately? I mean, how do you get someone enrolled in a program before something like this happens?
Well, and this is the touchy part about it, because if you're not careful and you go sending people out to other people's houses, and
that's what we were talking about earlier,
you could actually be putting them in more danger. Mm-hmm. You know, what we want to do and what we advocate doing is empowering the victim to be able to seek their own assistance and make their own safety plan through the advocacy centers. And it can be done through the Florida Domestic Violence Hotline. The number is 1-800-500-1119. That is the statewide hotline. They'll direct you, the victim, to a local shelter. They can implement safety planning there, a safe exit. The best person to know how to get out of a relationship safely is the victim themselves. So they just need a professional to help them.
And sometimes they can, because, I mean, it's financial. Sometimes they have children. Sometimes they have pets. I mean, that's your whole life you're walking away from.
It does take planning, but there's a lot of, and that's why we want them to pair up with an advocate that can help them establish a safety plan, a safe exit plan.
A route. Yeah. Escape route.
Statistics show that the most dangerous time for a woman in an abusive relationship is when she is leaving. That is the most dangerous time, and immediately after she left, because that power and control now has been totally taken away from that abuser. So we're looking at, you know, advocacy, extremely important for early advocacy to be entered into these non-fatal strangulation cases, because the advocates, our domestic violence advocates in our community that educates these folks that are in these situations, can help them with all of those things, you know, and help them plan.
And these people are our neighbors, our friends, our coworkers. It could just be somebody that you're seeing every day.
Yes.
You know, that's the sad thing about domestic violence. It's that you don't know who it's affecting.
Yes. Right? And then whenever you end up with, again, like I said, you know, abusers will find the best way. Well, a good thing to do is get away with it. If you're breaking the law, you don't want to get caught, right? So in a large majority of the cases that we investigate, there's very little signs or physical evidence. Unless somebody calls right away or it's been a particularly traumatic event, I mean, like a near-death event, then a lot of times we don't have outward signs or, you know, physical evidence to document to support the charge of this higher degree felony in the domestic violence. So what we try to do is we've incorporated nurse exams to try to do forensic examinations on the victims if they choose. You know, I mean, we don't force anybody to do anything, but we offer that. Listen, you know, we educate them on the dangers. We tell them that we're worried about them because, you know, this is non-fatal this time, but it could be fatal next time. Abuse generally doesn't decline, it usually accelerates. So, you know, we want to educate. And we also want to preserve evidence, have nurses introduce the medical community to document that evidence so we can submit it to our prosecutors and they have a better chance at prosecuting this person. So it doesn't just stop it from happening to this person. It may stop it from happening to, you know, 2, 3, 5 people down the road, you know, because there's consequences to this, you know, and we need to make sure that that's done, as well as the education. That's what I'm saying. There's got to be a multifaceted approach to every
many
problem.
Factors. And there have been cases where even an abuser, if he violates a protective order, it can take days for law enforcement to have the legal authority to arrest them. And oftentimes the arrest comes too late for the woman, the men, and the children, and the families to be protected. So, I mean, what can we do to speed that up as well?
Well, you know, quick action is the biggest thing. So we want to get it reported right away. We want advocacy introduced right away. We want the victims who are in the most amount of danger or any kind of danger to get to the shelters, just to give us the time to be able to do the things that we do. You know, the sheriff's office or any law enforcement agency does not want these people out there any more than anybody else does. You know, we value our community. We don't want anybody hurt. We're sorry that this person got hurt, and we don't want them to hurt anybody else. So we're going to work as hard as we can. It becomes a little problematic when we're trying to worry about whether or not our victim is safe, as well as trying to chase the bad guy, per se. Right?
Yes.
So if we get our advocates in touch with our victims, they're able to secure a safe shelter for them, then that takes a big weight off of our shoulders, because, you know, now we're not worried. Yeah, we're not worried about whether or not anybody can get to this victim. Now we can concentrate on going after this guy.
Yeah, as a society, I mean, we've talked on here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends with Serene Harbor. We've had multiple guests talking about the signs and symptoms of domestic violence and bullying and dating violence and all that. And somehow, somewhere, we're still missing that message about anger management. You know, sometimes we see a toddler acting up in a store or in the grocery or whatever, and you want to say, you know, we need to teach moms and dads and people personal responsibility for anger management of their own. I mean, what can we do as a society to help with that? Because almost every time it's power control and that one thing, somebody's angry. What can we do as moms, neighbors, sisters, aunties, just concerned citizens to help each other so that when we talk about anger management, people don't take it the wrong way? You know, I mean, we should be able to go to our high schools and have anger management 101, or middle schools or elementary schools, and spot who are the people that are so angry that they need help, mental help, you know, whatever help it is. But there are a lot of parents out there that need help. I just read a story where a mom in the airport, I think it was in Los Angeles, was having a very difficult time with a toddler. And the kid would not listen to her. He was running away. And she sat down in the middle of the floor and she started crying. Because if you hit the kid, they'll call 911 and you can't board your flight, much as protective custody. They'll take the child. So she started crying, and all these mothers formed a ring around her. And they sat down and played pat a cake with the child and sang Incy Wincy Spider. And she started crying, and she blogged about it afterwards, that had it not been for the moms, she just couldn't handle the situation. And you multiply that by so many times, how many parents need this help? And it is a stigma. They still won't ask for help either. So what can we do?
Well, you know, anger management and intervention in domestic violence events, and how to treat each other, you know, you have to start with the kids being little.
Yeah.
You know, you really do. You can't go into
civility. We need to teach people
to them, you know, now, you know, you can't pull that back. You know, you're not going to go back to the early formative ages and the views of, you know, how to treat one another at, you know, 16, 17, 18, 19 years old, 20 years old. You have to start with teaching the children values at a young age.
I always find that children fall into one of two categories. It's either you are who you are because of your parents, or you are who you are despite your parents.
Or your friends.
Or your friends.
And, you know, you are your environment.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, if you go home every day to a situation where your mom is worrying about making $9 an hour, no health insurance, and she has to put food on the table and she's got to pay rent, and then you have a dad that probably has kids with other people, so he has to pay child support. They can bring home a lot of money. So you're in a situation where it's stressful.
Yeah.
and people are worrying and you know, you need help, there's going to be some sort of violence in the home, whether it's physical or emotional or financial, and you pick that up. Mm-hmm. So then you go to school worried and upset about everything else, and then you may, you know, take that out on your classmates at school. So how do we help people, you know, so that these things don't happen? I mean, as a society, you know, we live in a global village, and we should care about our neighbor who makes $9 an hour, no health insurance, who's going home to a stressful situation, correct?
Mm-hmm. That's one thing I think we've lost over the years. I was thinking about this the other day. I call it community parenting. When most of us grew up, it wasn't just our parents. Our family was close by. We knew everybody in the neighborhood. Everybody looked out for everybody else. Everybody kind of helped each other. And we've kind of, now you're taking jobs away, you know, thousands of miles away. You have no family. You don't know who your neighbors are. So everything is depending on just you. And that makes it very difficult. This is where I think 211 is so important. If we can, and I know Belinda does a great job of getting the word out about it, but they have so many programs and so much help. They have some especially for children, too, that if they have something, anything, a situation, they can call and get help in a lot of different ways, I think. By calling 211.
Even homework, it used to be that an older sibling was in the home to help the younger sibling with homework or sharing responsibility at home. Now you've got all these extracurricular things that the older sibling is doing, so the little one is home alone. So then they get on the phone or they get on the internet to get help. And I don't know. You're right. It seems that the old-fashioned way was maybe a little bit different. I would say it was better because I grew up then. But I know if you walked by someone in our village and you didn't say good morning, your parents knew about it the next day because they would tell your parents, you know, your daughter walked by and didn't say good morning, or she didn't, you know, wave. I mean, people were more gentle, kind, compassionate. It's almost like the compassion is gone. We have to learn how to bring it back.
Well, I think I don't know that I 100% agree with that, because I think social media just exposes us that people aren't as nice as we like to believe. Truly. And I feel like the today's world, you know, we have such access to news, and if something happens, you know, in Trinidad today, you'll know about it 5 minutes from now.
Yes.
Because someone in your family can contact you. Whereas when my parents were growing up, if something happened in a shooting happened in Colorado and they grew up in Detroit, how would they have known?
I always wonder how those ladies did it in the village. Like, my mother would get the information, like, like before you know it. And we didn't have a telephone. Mm-hmm. She couldn't read and write. Yeah. There were no notepads to send a note. But my mom knew by the time we got home that we didn't say good morning to the neighborhood, you know, the elderly people waiting there with their children, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah.
So it's almost like I think we need to go back to where we care about each other. I mean, we live in such beautiful homes, in such great neighborhoods, in such great subdivisions, where people don't even know the neighbor across the street. They don't even know the people next door. And it's almost like we want to save the world, and we want to do all these great things with domestic violence, human trafficking, gun violence, but yet still we don't know the people that live next door to us. People don't take the time to say, hello, how are you? Mm-hmm. And it's amazing, if you say, hello, how are you? You might find out that someone has an elderly parent who has dementia. Or you might find out that a friend is trying to adopt a child. Or you might find, and then the advice starts flowing. That's marketing 101, right?
So one of the things that I think is cool is there is a new social media site called Turnkey. And I know my neighborhood has it. And they've even posted, like, has anybody seen so-and-so? Like, and then they say, oh, they're on vacation. But it's just... Yeah. You have to be a member of that community in order to.
I use Nextdoor.
Yeah, I use the Nextdoor app.
So, and
but even something like that. I mean, even though we're not social, you know, we shouldn't be doing this social media wise. It is the age, right?
Yeah.
And that's what we're doing. But just the simple fact that I know every dog in the neighborhood now. So, like, if a dog escapes, I can bring the dog back to the house. I know who's been in and out. I know who's on vacation. I know who's, you know, we have a little community watch thing. So if nothing else, the 200 houses that are in my subdivision, at least the 200 of us feel a little bit safer.
But, you know, by
the
way,
the car break-ins have decreased because everybody's paying attention. I mean, so many things have gotten better, and we've only been using it for about 4 months.
But, you know, there are some neighborhoods that people are technologically challenged. And there are some neighborhoods where people can't afford to pay for the internet. They can't afford Bright House Networks or what. So, you know, I think they are, but still, you know, I think a lot of people still, they're afraid of social media. You have the older people who are afraid, and there are some people that would tell their children don't get on it. I always say that the best thing to do is call law enforcement, 911, if there's an issue. And they'll direct you, you know, what to do in any circumstances, right? But we just wanted to tell our listeners who we're speaking to, we're speaking with Janelle Boozer with Brevard Regional Hyperbaric Center. We have Cindy Young, who's an agent with the Special Victims Unit here in Brevard County, Florida, Domestic Violence Unit. And we have Claire Ellis, who is the chairman of the Human Trafficking Committee. So we're talking a little bit about domestic violence, including strangulation. And I tell you, when we think about domestic violence, we always think about power control, gun violence, financial dependence. I never thought about strangulation in that way. So thank you for bringing that to our attention. What else can we share with our listeners about strangulation and how to help the victims or the perpetrators?
You can go to Zonta Club of Melbourne's website and purchase a ticket for our chocolate festival.
That's right. So, and the thing is the Zonta Club of Melbourne, you guys are a member of Zonta International, a global organization of executives and professional working people to working together to advance the status of women worldwide through service and advocacy. But I didn't know this, and we didn't touch on this last time, that the name Zonta is actually, it means honest and trustworthy?
Yes, it does.
I was going to ask you to tell us a little bit about
that. It's interesting. A lot of the symbols and a lot of the words that came when Zonta was formed come from the Lakota Sioux, when we don't know why, especially maybe the women that started it, there was some, they were Native American. So that's our whole thing, is honest and trustworthy. And we are all volunteers, because we believe if you improve the life of a woman, you improve the life for all. If a woman's bringing a little more money home in her paycheck, they're going to eat better. The children are going to have a better chance at education. The whole family is going to become a better family.
So you empower the
women. We empower women. Yes. We strongly believe in education. We give so many scholarships locally, and also we donate to Zonta International, who gives 35 $10,000 fellowships for women going into aerospace engineering. And what makes the money to do all this for all our good works, to support the Pridmore Center, the homeless residents for women and children, all of our education, our fight against human trafficking, it's the major event, the Chocolate Festival. Mm-hmm. This is our 14th year. And this is where you will find out about fair trade products. What does it mean to have ethically sourced chocolate? It means that no child slavery was used to make this chocolate. It means people were paid a fair wage to work on these plantations to bring you this product. And it's not just chocolate. It could be coffee. It could be other products. So we're educating the public that day what signs to look for, what brands carry the Green Forest Alliance or UTZ or just say fair trade. This is so important. People are not aware about,
you know, I was at the gym this morning, and one of the gentleman walking next to me, he said, "So who do you have on your show today?" So I said, "Zonta, and the Zonta Club is coming on," and I told him about the Chocolate Festival. And so he said, "Chocolate? Why chocolates of all things?" And I said, "Are they picking on chocolates? I'm not, no." So I said, "Well, you know, did you know that in some countries they've got children under the age of 10 working 10 to 18 hours a day picking the cocoa to make the chocolate?" And I told him about, you know, some of the chocolates we had spoken about before. And he said, "I had no idea." So I told him to Google it. I didn't have, you know, information with me then about the date. I forgot the date. But it's amazing how many people knows nothing about, A, what Zonta Club does, and two,
the Chocolate Festival that you all, for the 14th time, 14 you have had.
We are a small group of mighty women.
Yes.
Who accomplish amazing things.
So tell our listeners a little bit about the chocolates. And I don't mind if you mention, I mean, I know Kit Kat was one of the ones we talked about that is so popular.
Mm-hmm.
But that's one of the ones that does not have that little green seal, right?
Right. We say Dove chocolate. You look for the green frog. Most Dove products, not all of them. Also, I think it's pronounced Shoker. That's a big brand that Aldi carries. That has the UTZ logo, Fair Trade logo. But a lot of the ones, most of the ones that you eat a lot,
they don't.
Probably do not.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I've only been a member of Zonta since August of 2017, but I've been a daughter of a Zontran my whole life. Yeah. My mother, Deborah, she's co-chaired the Chocolate Festival in the past, and they've broken up the Chocolate Festival into a couple of different categories. And the main part that people come for the Chocolate Festival is for our best chocolate fix in Brevard. We're very fortunate to have some of the best chocolatiers and restaurants and pastry chefs in Brevard County come together for an actual competition.
So what time does the Chocolate Festival start, and what time does it end, and how can someone purchase tickets?
Well, to keep your blood sugar low, we started at 11.
You heard that, Ellen.
We start the Chocolate Festival doors open at 11. The competition starts at 11 as well. Right now, we have returning champions. We have the Yellow Dog Cafe, Chef Stewart from the Yellow Dog. Woohoo! He's coming back. We have Buena Vida Estates, which is very exciting. They came in second place this year, and I know they're hunting for gold. We also have Promise Cafe, which is the great non-for-profit bakery that employs children with special needs, which is amazing. They came in third last year, I believe. Second or third?
I think they were second.
And Buena Vida third. That's right. Match Kashpa, who's also a previous champion. He's coming back this year. Salvation Army, Gita over the Salvation Army. She's a previous champion.
Gita's getting involved?
Gita's getting involved.
So now some people are they all making cakes and
they're making
cookies and
tasty what? Tasty treats. We have no idea what they're making, and it's to the point now. I know Riverview signed up just this morning. Riverview is a senior assisted living signed up just this morning, and it's really hush hush. Like, nobody tells anybody what they're making. We have no idea.
That's a secret. Yeah. We're like super secret chocolate agents.
We're super secret chocolate agents. What's really exciting is that last year when the Yellow Dog Cafe won, the pastry chef there, I can't remember her name. She's incredibly talented, young lady. The dessert was so good, they put it on the menu. So chocolate bread pudding is on the menu what won last year.
I almost wish they could put a little chocolate in flan. You know, that's so delicious.
I love
flan.
If you come up with the recipe, you too can be a competitor at the Chocolate Festival.
Viewpoint with Sita.
Chef Uza is here.
Yes. Yeah, Chef Uza. I was a chef in a former.
Incredible pastry chef.
Actually, believe it or not, when I was in culinary school, I won the cake competition. They used to have the student cake competition.
So then we'll
have
Viewpoint with Sita and friends getting involved in the competition, Ellen. We'll have to come up with something for next year.
You do a traditional Indian dish.
Yeah, I could Sita,
you know I can't cook. I will be the best cheerleader that you've ever seen. Ever.
I'll make my curry chicken and put some chocolate in that. This is the best part of our show, when we have guests in studio that we can have a fun, educational, informative show and just have fun. Because as women, this is what we want to do.
Yeah.
We're using our talent, gifts, and abilities to bring so much joy into the world and do such wonderful things. And the Zonta Club also gives out local scholarships as well.
Oh, yes. We get tons of scholarships.
So the money that you make at the Chocolate Festival not only helps with the victims of strangulation and education for people that needs it in our community, but you also reach out worldwide and help empower women and girls, men too.
A lot of people don't realize.
Men with Zonta. Yes,
as well. We have male members. It's a male and female membership.
Mm-hmm.
We just want to improve the status of women. We're in countries, underdeveloped countries, that when you think about it, there is no 911. There is no 211. There is no women's center. Mm-hmm. What is there? Zonta. That's how I look at it. Zonta is there, and they're trying to help the woman improve herself, improve her life, save her medically. We're in Liberia, and the whole problem is the girls get married so young, in these countries, their bodies really aren't completely formed to have children. So they have very difficult labors. And things happen. That's why the mortality rate is so high. They weren't meant to be having children, their children themselves. Mm-hmm. And so we're...
And I like that Zonta also gets involved in giving out valuable information about birth control as well. Because I read where they were in India, all over the place, giving out information. Because you're right, they're so young. And it's a topic that a lot of families don't talk mm-hmm. to the young girls about in those countries. They get married at the age of 11 and 12 sometimes. Yes. And they're carrying a baby at 13. A baby yourself at 13. Mm-hmm. So when Zonta steps in and gives out the information about various forms of birth control, I mean, I'm not sure if it helps a lot, but it does help the girls to at least protect themselves.
Yeah. Zonta works really closely, believe it or not. Most people don't realize, but the United Nations. Mm-hmm. And we sit on a board there. Zonta International does. And some of the service projects, Zonta has been so successful, we've actually had to discontinue international service projects because we gave out enough vaccines to eradicate diseases in third world countries. I mean,
awesome. And, you know, that's the thing. That's why I like having this show, because we give out this information, and then I'll have people that call up and say, I had no idea that they were doing that. Because I know I had my first child when I was 19 years old in Trinidad and Tobago. And she's a legal citizen, for anybody who's listening, naturalized citizen. I remember when I gave birth, there were so many people in the ward. There was like, I don't know, 6 to 8 people giving birth at the same time, all on a different bed. Mm-hmm. And some were very young. And I remember the Planned Parenthood people coming, family planning, they call it, and they mm-hmm. give you a slip to go join the family planning clinic. Mm-hmm. And a lot of those organizations were funded by things like the United Nations Zonta Club or maybe missionaries here from the United States, WHO, and different places, because the country didn't have that much money. But there were outside agencies that were offering assistance in education on how to prevent births that age, 14 to 16, 18 years of age.
Well, one of the things that we're doing as a club this year that Claire is really phenomenal at is we're going to be going into the high schools and educating high school kids on what human sex trafficking is and how dangerous it is. And parents don't realize nowadays that human sex traffickers, they don't just pick up your kids on the side of a street and tell them they have puppies, you wanna come pet a puppy. They're coming through social media apps. They're coming at your children through your cell phones, for your laptops, or your tablets, or your computers, and how dangerous it is and how easy it is.
Yeah. Let me just add gaming systems.
Yes.
Because all these gaming systems with all these chat
Xbox Live. Yeah.
You know, these folks are getting on there and they're, you know, they start out, you know, playing these games with the children, and then they establish what they've
trust
relations, yes. mm-hmm. relationships. And you'll talk to these children and these children will say, no, that's my friend. That's my friend. Mm-hmm. And they think it's, you know, another 12-year-old boy or girl in a different state. And it's not. It's some, you know, predator out there yeah. that's grooming their child and building this trust and these relationships through these very mm-hmm. innocent means.
And, you know, some people may think that, oh, why would you go into high schools to educate this? Because it's the high school kids that are the targets here. You know, we need to educate the people who are potential victims.
And when I go to the high schools, I have a list that I have of sites that they shouldn't be going on. And they laugh at me and I say, you know, I didn't come up with this. Law enforcement gave it to me and I'm giving it to you. And then I tell parents whenever I speak about human trafficking, if you have a minor living in your home, you must have their passwords to every device that they have. If they have 7, you need all their passwords. And it's not that you're going to spy on them, but you would have the ability, and it has happened, to know where they are. You know, God forbid if something happened, they can be found. These are the things, and you must have their passwords. And I tell the kids, too, you must give your parents your passwords.
Yeah, well, and it's amazing how many parents don't do that. And
I know.
And the children are so young now when they get a device. It's amazing that, you know, in the old days, you sat down around the dinner table and you spoke with your parents and you tell them about your day and you tell them about the bully at school and you tell them about the hardships you're having to do algebra, or, you know, if you need a new PE uniform, and you talk about it, and dad and mom talked about finances. Well, how are we going to get the new PE uniform? How are we going to help with homework? somebody up the street is good on math, somebody. But nowadays, with these, with social media, the children are sitting at the dinner table with the phone open on Instagram or Snapchat or whatever it is, and they're not communicating with each other. I'm not sure where we're heading with all of this, but I think we have to be extremely careful. And I think that's where
remember
agents,
when
your, our agent can speak agents.
Well, remember when Sheriff Ivey had done the Time to Be a Parent Again classes that he was going around? Yes. And that was my favorite line that he used. He said, the kids don't give you the password, I'll give you the code of how to get in. You take the device, you put it under the back tire of the car, mm-hmm. and you roll over it.
No,
you can
you
break
what?
Into any computer.
It's easy to say. It's easy to go to your kids and say, okay, give me a list of all of your passwords for all of your devices. You know, for every app you've got, every chatting, texting, whatever thing you're using to talk to strangers with. It's easy to go and they'll write down whatever it is that they're going to write down for you. But you have to, you really do have a huge responsibility to verify that the information that they've provided you is correct, and to keep up with that information and actually go in and physically keep an eye on what they're doing. If there is some sort of red flag issue that comes up when you're monitoring these devices or these apps or programs, then get rid of them. Get them off of there.
Yes.
You know.
Well, it's time to be a parent again sometimes, right? So we've got about 10 minutes left, and I wanted Janelle Buza to talk a little bit about the hyperbaric chamber, because your mom was so kind to sponsor today's show for us.
Yes.
For the Zonta Club to talk about human trafficking and to speak about domestic violence and strangulation. So before we go off air, tell us a little bit about the hyperbaric chamber.
Well, we're the proud owners of the largest civilian-owned hyperbaric chamber in the United States, right behind the Melbourne Mall. Nobody even knows it. Nobody even really knows. It's a pretty phenomenal facility. I was 13 years old when it was put together, and I watched my parents sacrifice so much to build it. A hyperbaric chamber is a specialized pressure vessel. It's about the size of an average American's living room. It's very comfortable. There's lazy boy style seats inside, and we simulate an atmospheric pressure of 45 feet below sea level. And during that time, our patients breathe 100% pure oxygen. And that pure oxygen throws their body into an incredibly advanced state of healing. We primarily use it for diabetics with non-healing leg wounds. The statistics coming out right now about diabetics over the age of 60 who have lower extremity amputation, so the foot, the leg, the lower leg, above the knee, below the knee. This is awful. So within 5 years, half of them have already passed away. So most people don't realize how severe and how serious of a situation it is when your grandmother, your grandfather, your aunts, and your uncles who are getting old, who have diabetes, who don't control their sugars, get that wound, have a blister on the toe, step on a nail because they can't feel it and walk with it in their foot all day. I had a gentleman the other day. It's terrifying.
Yeah, and oftentimes a lot of people don't even know they have a diagnosis of diabetes.
Yeah. Or they think they're pre-diabetic, so they're okay, but they're on diabetic medication.
I'm worried.
You know?
I'm worried if I had got a blister because I'm like, God, everybody's pre-diabetic.
Everybody,
if it's not healing,
yeah.
I better be careful.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and so we do a lot. I mean, we're truly in the business of saving limbs and saving lives, which is really phenomenal. One of the other areas in which I am incredibly passionate about is cancer survivors. Most people don't realize that what radiation actually does to your body. Radiation is phenomenal. It kills the cancer, gets rid of it, sends you into remission. You know, you walk out, you're still alive. It's phenomenal. Your life has changed, but you're still alive. Especially for women who have had breast cancer, there's a phenomenon out there. It's called painful breast syndrome. And a lot of times these women are put on lifetime narcotics, because they think that there's nothing else out there, and their doctors don't know that there's a non-narcotic treatment out there. And what the hyperbarics does is it goes in and heals all of those tissues that got damaged. And it's not, when you say tissues, it's hard to explain. So it's not just the skin, it's everything that's below the skin, the muscles, the fatty tissue, everything gets damaged. All those little blood vessels that give support. You know, you have to think of it like roots of a tree. Roots of a tree, it's not giant root system. It's a bunch of little roots coming off a couple of big roots that hold the tree up.
So it's an alternative to taking a pill.
It's totally an alternative. We're non-pharmaceutical.
Oxygen flowing to that part of the body.
Oh, yeah. And the oxygen goes in there, and those cells go from a sleepy point to an overactive point. And I was telling Ellen earlier, it's kind of like running a marathon. Your cells run a marathon while you're in the chamber.
So give us a website for if someone's interested. And you do have to have a doctor's order. to have the treatment,
yes,
correct?
Yes, you do.
So you
do.
Go to your physician and you say, I have a wound that's not healing.
Right.
I have heard about the hyperbaric chamber. Can you give me at least a try it?
Right. Or you can call us directly and we can do that like work for you.
So give us a website for that as well.
BRHCHyperbarics.com. The website is great. It's very informative. We have a lot of information out there. And then for those who are also interested in learning about where to go to buy Chocolate Festival tickets, you can go to
Zonta Space Coast.org. Only on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, we go from talking about diabetes, yes, insulin dependent, not insulin dependent, metformin, whatever is out there.
It's moderation.
Straight to our chocolate. But you know what? The thing is, the bottom line, you just have to be responsible with your health.
Oh, you have to.
So the chocolate's not going to cause diabetes in one day.
Everything we have talked about on your show today, Sita, everything we have talked about all falls back on personal responsibility.
That's right.
You know, everything we've talked about today, human sex trafficking, gun safety,
diabetes, strangulation,
it's all about being responsible and you being responsible for yourself and your actions.
This beautiful thing we call life, you have to take responsibility for it. So give us a website for that one more time.
The website is zontaspacecoast.org. You could look at the Chocolate Festival tab, and tickets right now, early tickets, if you buy them before you get to the door, they're $25 a ticket. On the day of the festival, they're $30. And then you can buy an upgraded ticket with a kick and you get some a little bit of chocolate martinis, and those are $40 a ticket.
Well worth it, let me say.
You know, I just want to say before I leave today, you know, when I heard that Claire was coming on with Janelle and Special Agent Young, Agent Young. It's just that we never really had an agent on our show before.
Special agent in charge.
That's so much fun. Maybe you'll invite me back.
We will. But you know, I read this morning and I thought it was so sweet. It says, the human body is a beautiful, mechanical, spiritual masterpiece. And then I added in that it makes me very sad when people use the human body to kill the innocent people with guns and spread hatred and racism. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to add to that when they exploit other people for human trafficking as well. I mean, people all over the world need to be careful. You know, God only gives us this body and this brain and this beautiful existence on this planet. And we ought to use it to do good things. And there's so much help out there that, just like we were saying, don't just sit at home and think there's no help. There is help. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of reaching out for it and know who you trust, right? Like you said, personal responsibility from your parents, from your elders, people in your community, and community policing. Like Sheriff Ivy used to say, what did he tell us? It takes a village, right?
So thank you all for being here with us today. And thank you, Cheryl Anderson, for calling in and speaking about gun control. And I want to just take a quick minute, because we didn't do any of our sponsor airs because we had such a great conversation today. So I'd just like to send out a shout out to Jotkoff Financial, to Dixie Crossroads, to Cloud9 Sleep Shop, and I'm missing somebody.
It's okay.
Medfast. Yes. So all of our great sponsors who have been with us. Yes. So and our website is SitaMediaInc.com. You can get all of our downloads and our podcasts. And another great show will
and
be next
week.
And
thanks to Deb Boozer for sponsoring our show. Yes. And thanks to Agent Young for coming. And Claire Ellis and Cheryl Anderson for calling in. And also, I know what the sheriff says that's stuck in my mind. And I've shared this with him. I've shared it in Trinidad and Tobago to all my friends. Say that the sheriff always says, be the top cop at home. That's what he says. That's his slogan. And I like it, because if you are the top cop, he says, then you'd prevent me, him, the sheriff, from getting them for his jails.
This is the Christian Voice of Brevard on WWBC 1510 AM.
We bow down and confess you are Lord in this place. We bow down and confess you are Lord in this place. You are all